if we could have the name of Kleiman's book, please, in the speaking queue. I'd like to ask Adam if he could give a clarification as to why profits should have been falling in the period that Kleiman was talking about. Are you willing to do a little bit of clarification on that, please, Adam?
Perhaps I should explain why it was that we invited Andrew Kleiman to give this talk. It wasn't on the basis of a book that he wrote, but of a pamphlet which was aimed at people that thought, well, people that think that capitalist crisis could be overcome by increasing popular consumption, by increasing wages and social reform benefits. And I mean, as you would have seen from listening to it, I mean, he makes the same points that we make, that capitalist crises originate from the internal working of the capitalist economic system and not from accidental shocks from outside the system. And it's also that capitalism is therefore a crisis-prone system, and it's a crisis-prone system because it's production for profit and not production to meet human needs. And you know, I thought he brings out very well that what causes fluctuations in economic activity is changes in business investment, and changes in business investment depend on the rate of profit. So if the rate of profit falls for whatever reason, I mean, it can fall for all sorts of reasons, whatever reason, then business investment ceases, and you have a slump, and that's the situation. So I think that the theory that we've tended to support as to why crises happen is that overproduction, that when there's a boom on, all firms want a share of the extra profits available, and they misjudge it, and one key sector of the economy overproduces, and when it cuts back, this has a knock-on effect on the rest of the economy, and you end up in the situation like you said in Detroit. So I mean, so that's we've put this on instead of not instead of Mike's talk, but to replace it as a sort of introduction as to this one theory as to why crises occur is invalid, and that is the people that say it's due to underconsumption, and the answer is therefore to increase consumption. As I say, I haven't got handy the name of the pamphlet, but while other people are talking, I'll see if I can track it down and put it in the speaking queue. Right.
Thanks, Adam. Think Richard might want to make a contribution because he's typing in. Richard, go ahead if you want to make a contribution.
Actually, no, Steve. I'm just I was putting some information in. I wasn't going to speak.
Okay, sorry. Has anybody got any daft questions? There's, I can appreciate that it was quite an involved talk. So please, if you've got. Okay, I've got a question from Mike. Please go ahead, Comrade Foster.
Hello there. Yeah, this is a I don't know if it's a daft question. That's for others to judge. I can't say I know too much about Andrew Kleiman's views before today, but I think he said something in there about him supporting reforms. I'm guessing this would be a question directed to him if he was here in person. But my understanding was that he That wasn't just because he thought that workers should sort of have as many crumbs as possible, but that reforms could, well, I don't know really, could make a sort of substantial difference to how capitalism runs. I was just wondering if someone else, maybe Adam or anyone else, could maybe expand more on his views of reformism. But at the same time, he seems to sort of grasp quite a lot of the case as we understand it, where obviously reformism isn't seen as worthwhile. So, yeah, I was just wondering if anyone knew more about his views on the worth of reforms. Yeah. Cheers, thanks.
I can see. Do you want to speak on that, Adam?
I think in this particular context, he's not using the word reform in the sense which we normally use it. He's using it in the sense of to include things like higher wages. He's using it in the sense of improvements to working class conditions, whether they're caused by government legislation or by, I think in this particular case, he would say trade union action. But that's in this context. But I think he's a member of an organization called the Marxist Humanist Initiative, which has the same definition of socialism that we do. But I think they do also support reforms as well as if you can get them from the capitalist class. But I say in this particular context, I think he was saying that high wages aren't a solution to a crisis. They make things worse for the capitalists. But even so, we still want higher wages. I think that was his point.
Okay, cheers.
I've just put in the name of the podcast that Kleiman makes with another chap, forgotten his name, as part of this Marxist Humanist Initiative, and as Adam says, they are that organisation seems to have a very sloppy approach to revolutionary ideas, because they seem to get they want to bring everybody in, whether it be young people striving for their identity, striving for their freedom, or nationalist movements and things like that. They seem to have a very, very sloppy analysis, and it comes it seems to be a lot of their ideas are based on an ex-Trotskyist called Raya Dunatskaya, that I don't know much about. But you can listen to Kleiman's views on that Radio Free Humanity podcast. Some of them are a little bit patchy, but he does seem to be particularly concerned about Trumpism and that sort of thing. So it surprises me when I listen to him, because he's definitely in agreement with us. He's definitely revolutionary, but then he seems to get bogged down with opinions about tittle tattle of capitalism. Okay, Harvey tells us there's a copy of the book on libcom.org, so that's free if you want to read that. Thank you, Harvey. Yes, please, Harvey, if you'd add the link, that'd be great. Okay, well, as we don't have any questions or contributions, unless anybody wants to make one quickly, has anybody got anything else they'd like to discuss? We don't necessarily have to stick to this topic, because there are other things going on in the world. Adam, please.
Well, if people think that this talk was difficult to follow, they don't know what's coming when Mike Shouty speaks on Sunday the 28th of November, because his talk will be a lot more theoretical and a lot more wider range than this. I thought, in fact, that Andrew Kleiman explained quite simply what is the basic part of our case. I mean, socialism is not just a nice idea which we seek to convince a majority of people to to put into practice. Another essential part of our case is that capitalism cannot be reformed so as to work in the interests of the workers. And to back up that case, you have to have some theoretical knowledge of economics. And I think the points that Kleiman was making were fairly simple and straightforward. Capitalism is not a system of production for use, and it's not a system geared to satisfying personal consumption. It's a system of production for profit. And in such a system, the important part of the economy is the business sector, which invests for profit. And if there isn't any profit, or enough profit to be made, then the business sector will stop doing that, and that will provoke a economic crisis. And that the way out of this is not then to increase consumption, because the system, the key element in the economy is what businesses invest for profit. I'm a bit surprised that some members think this is complicated. It's the essential basic party case. We're not out there just to convince people that socialism is a nice idea.
Adam, it may be that I was being a little bit cautious on behalf of other members. Don't agree with what you say. The issue is, if, for example, you've not read Volume 2 of Capital, you might not be familiar with the idea of production of the means of production, and this is when you can start getting quite lost. Right, okay. We've got a question from or a contribution from Comrade Edwards. Please go ahead, Comrade.
Hi, yeah, good morning, comrades. That was that was all very interesting, and I suppose in response to the presentation, as well as to highlight what you just one of your lines there, Stephen, you talk about what's going on in the rest of the world, and that is very much an inherent part of crisis theory. There are so many, given that crisis is an inherent part of capitalism, there are so many variables and so many extremes to it that it's almost impossible to get the perfect combination at any one time. Marx was a great advocate of using averages rather than extremes to promote his case, and Engels really sort of built on that in Volume 3 of Capital. You know, so much of it is about capitalism is down to investment, and investing in any one particular thing at any one time. There are capitalists who want to invest in the hard economy, show like, or fixed value capitalism, and those who want to invest in labour value, and one very much depends on the other, and getting all the features right at any one time, which is well nigh impossible to do. You know, bring us up to the very present moment in time, we see some factors that are influencing the current crisis. One that was arguably avoidable, but certainly had an impact, and that was the COVID pandemic, which really sort of had a massive influence in who was spending money on what, and who got their speculation right. For most of us, we lost through it, but for some, they made an absolute killing because they happened to make the right judgment call and put their money where they thought they were going to best get a return, and so many succeeded, mainly at the expense of the working class, as is so often the case. When you also take into consideration government influences, including the Tory government, or certainly a lot of the Tory government, telling us or trying to convince us and succeeding in convincing a lot of people about how effective and how good Brexit was going to be, when to all intents and purposes, well, we see the crisis in labour in terms of distribution of goods through lorry drivers and delivery drivers, and the Tory government's policy of excluding drivers from other countries, arguably lower paid drivers from coming into the UK and trying to encourage our own drivers to come forward when there just wasn't enough of them. Now they've had to do a U-turn and backtrack on that in order to bring other drivers in, which is having a positive impact on the wages of transport drivers, for transport drivers, because their wages have inevitably gone up in order to meet those demands. But that in turn will obviously lead to an increase in costs for the rest of us as consumers when it comes to filling those shelves and then going to get the goods that we need in order to survive, food and drink and such like. In other words, other items of absolute just necessity. And then, of course, that too, in turn, will turn on its head eventually when there will be a surplus and those drivers will then be laid off. And then their ability to of affordability for consumption and such like. So what I'm trying to say is, yes, it can be complicated. Yes, it can be a difficult thing to get your head around. But when you do, you can really start to grasp the whole theory of what he was putting across, that there is no one single factor, but a whole series of factors that cause these crises, which are implicit and very much a part of production for profit rather than for use. So much of it's down to speculation. If they get it wrong, they make an arse of it and we all suffer. And such is the effects of capitalism, and all the more reason why we need to get rid of it. And that, comrades, is my take on it. Open to correction, of course, or agreement. Cheers.
Yeah, I just want to make an observation and also answer your call for stupid questions, Steve. So I've got an observation, then a stupid question. Okay, so the first thing is, I thought it was really, what Clyman said was really really interesting, and I agree. Yeah, it was pretty clear. I mean, workers can't buy back the full, you know, what they produced at any time. I thought Clyman made that really clear. The analogy of aircraft and gravity, I thought, was very apposite. Nothing very difficult, or nothing controversial in there from our point of view at all. So I suspect that's why there's, you know, there's a bit of a lack of contributions, because it's hard to argue with any of that. I think one thing that maybe was missing from the bit we heard, maybe he mentioned it somewhere else, but I think it's worth bearing in mind. I think it's not just that, you know, capitalists sometimes get it wrong. It's the problem of time and the problem of scale. If you think about lead times to increasing things like oil production, I mean, you're talking years sometimes. When oil prices hit the floor, which happened in the last 10 years, what happens is the investment goes out of the oil drilling industry, rigs get closed or put on or mothballed. The same with gas. The lead times to step up production in the event of a shortage are not instant. It's not like turning on a tap and turning off a tap. It can take years. There was one example from some years ago with the coffee crop in Brazil that some people might remember. The lead time for increasing coffee supplies from the farm is about 7 years. To get a coffee crop to full production, it's about 7 years. And years ago in Brazil, they ended up running their trains, their coal trains, off coffee beans. They were stoking the burners in trains with coffee beans because they were worthless, and that was to do with the international coffee price, you know, on the markets. And that's all to do with speculation as well, with, you know, speculating in futures and this sort of thing. So that's all quite complicated. But my main point observation there is a time and scale needs to be taken into account. If you're producing coffee or gas or something like that, it's not just a matter of getting it wrong tomorrow. You've got to be thinking 10 years ahead. And of course, it's nearly impossible because all the actors, all the producers are all acting privately. They're not getting a conference together and saying, OPEC does do that, in fact. But in general, you know, these operators are acting in isolation from each other. So they're making decisions in isolation because of corporate confidentiality and things like that. So that's a sort of, a big contribution to, why you get these, sort of rise and fall of production. My question, though, is this is my stupid question here, is my understanding of booms and slumps is that because of this problem of time and scale, when they're ramping up production, basically they don't know when to stop. They just have to guess. They don't know when to stop. If they're selling stuff, well, they carry on investing, and they sell more stuff, and they invest more, and then they sell more stuff, and then they invest more. Eventually, there has to be a point where they invest more, but suddenly they're not selling anything. The investments continues to go up, but suddenly consumption levels off, and you've got a crisis of overproduction, which then cascades through all other industries, leading to a general slump. That was my understanding of our case, that slumps are a crisis of overproduction. But what I don't really understand, and I did understand what Kleiman was saying about under-consumptionism being wrong because workers can't buy back what they produce. But isn't overproduction ultimately the same thing as under-consumption? If you're producing too much and you can't sell it all, isn't that the same as under-consumption? What is it I'm missing here? Can somebody maybe help me out there? Thanks.
Thanks, Paddy. Adam, do you want to come back in on that last question?
Yeah, but I think the word consumption needs to be defined because it's actually not it's paying consumption. It's what people can pay for. So I mean, though there's overproduction, it's overproduction in relation to paying consumption. It's not overproduction in relation to people's needs. So that's what I would. That's what I would say about about that. Capitalism is producing for the market. So I mean they've got a good word for this. I mean the only demand that counts is demand that can be backed up by money, and they call it effective demand. There's plenty of demand out there. In fact, from that point of view, capitalism is a system of permanent underproduction. There's not enough. Goods for services for satisfy personal consumption is being produced. I think the only thing to make this proviso, when you're talking about consumption within the context of the capitalist economy, you're talking about consumption that can be backed up, paying consumption, effective demand.
Yeah, but isn't the right? I mean, I thought Kleiman explained it very well in the. In his talk, the issue is not about working class consumption; it's about productive consumption. This is perhaps one a term that isn't particularly familiar to you. I think he called it investment consumption, and whatever we are using, whatever we are able to buy as workers, has nothing to do with that investment or productive consumption. Do you want to say any more on that, Adam? I'm not sure. Or do you want to come back, Paddy? If not, I'll take... okay. Yeah, go ahead, please.
I just noted down some of the terms that he used to define the part of production or part of consumption in inverted commas. He's talked about business investment, productive investment spending. I mean, that's the other part of the economy apart from what... workers spend on their personal consumption. So, yeah, I mean, it's, the word consumption is used in all sorts of different ways, but they say your productive consumption is what he called also business investment and productive investment. You know, so it's getting more and more confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, can I just briefly just chime in? I think I'm a bit... I don't really get what else. If investment consumption is not ultimately in the service of sales, you know, consumption, what is it? What else is it for? This is what I probably don't get.
Well, yeah, okay, Barry. I mean, it's in service. Investment consumption is to produce goods for sale, but it's to produce capital goods. Or rather, it's to produce means of production, and of course, what's occurring in that is exactly the same as in the rest of the economy, which is that people are producing increasingly more and more, and always in isolation. So you've always got that possibility for disruption with the overproduction within that sector of the economy. It's what Marge called Department One in Volume Two of Capital. So you've got exactly the same sort of potential for dislocation in that sector of the economy as you do in production for consumer for consumer goods, we've got a comment from Harvey about the destruction of commodities to keep up prices. Absolutely so, and this is still ongoing. In fact, it becomes institutionalised in something like the European Union, where you've still got farmers being paid not to grow stuff. But this has been going on ever since capitalism arose, even in the 17th century. I understand from reading that the Dutch East India Company would be quite happy to destroy spices and stuff like that to stop it to keep up their prices. So it's been going on for 400 years under the capitalist form of production. Second question there from Comrade Deutsch. Go ahead, please, Pat.
Yes, hello. Now, I don't remember which particular crisis or recession that it was, but I recall seeing on a poster on a lamppost and it said, "The recession will end when you start to spend," which I thought at the time was... really showed the ignorance that there is about the position. And I really, while there is room for other approaches, I would really sort of echo what Adam said, that the understanding of the Marx and economics is really basic to our case, and I thought that the Kleiman talk was very clear on the matter, and you sometimes hear people, even members, saying that this Marx and 19th century and so on, but it's still extremely relevant. But the strange thing I find is, I know that when something seems simple, once you understand something, it can seem, let's say, relatively simple. Why other people come to different conclusions from looking at the same material? That I always find very puzzling. That's all. Thank you.
I was being too protective of the audience when I said it might be a bit difficult. Comrade Edwards, please.
Yeah, hello again, comrades. So maybe a potential possible answer for Paddy's conundrum and query, and a good one it is too. And I think if you trace it all back again, you know, based on obvious Marx and Engels theory, because I think we're very often guilty of forgetting the impact that Engels had on the production of capital. And there's all these different sort of tiers of production. For example, you know, you've got investors who want to, who maybe own the land from which the raw materials are dug out, who may be investing in that. Then you've got the producers and those who want to produce the factories and the means of production. And then within those factories, they've got to be filled with machines that... well, you know, production of the means of production of the means of production, put simply. So while they're in the process of being built until eventually the end consumer or commodity is produced, you have these different layers of investment with a view to profit. And the only way to secure that profit is to buy in the labour and the surplus of value that is produced from that labour. So when everything's all well and good and fine and dandy and they're in full production and we've got the workers buying up all the goods from the cross section that are necessary, eventually that's got to, if not come to a grinding halt, but once everyone has got their washing machine or their microwave or their car, apart from maybe very spendthrifty and very sort of greedy people who want two and three and four of each. But eventually, when most people satisfied their needs are satisfied, the production, you know, everybody's got what they need or more or less need or more to the point can afford, then the production slows down and then you have this surplus. And then, as Paddy rightly points out as part of his question, by more or less answering his own question, these items generally sit stale, just gathering dust. And so production comes to a grinding halt again. People lose their jobs, their wages, can't afford to spend anything or spend much or whatever. And the whole sort of laws of supply and demand kick in. So that would probably be pretty much my take and probably the best way I could maybe answer or attempt to answer Paddy's question. And, well, you know, I hope that helps offer some sort of fundamental explanation. Cheers.
Adam?
Yeah, I thought that Feynman did address the point that that Paddy made, which is that ultimately... production, even under capitalism, must be for personal consumption. But I mean, but his answer to that was, it isn't. And capitalism isn't a his way to say it is absurd that you have production for the sake of production. It is absurd that capitalism is a system geared to accumulating more and more capital in the form of more and more means of production. I mean, capitalism is absurd. I think, you know, I think he made that point. It is an irrational system, ultimately. I mean, it had its historic role, if you can use that sort of term, in building up the means of production. But it's done that now. And the fact that it continues to be a system of capital accumulation is having an effect, you know, to come to today as on the environment. It is an irrational system. It isn't geared even ultimately to meeting to use climate's example, to providing shoes for people. It isn't geared to meeting people's needs. It's geared to accumulating capital out of profits. And so, you know, it's as I say, I keep on saying, repeating myself now, that it's an irrational system from the point of view of satisfying people's needs.
Yeah, and just to okay, we've got Paddy in the queue. Go ahead, please, Paddy.
Yeah, I've understood the word under consumption in the wrong way. What we seem to be saying here is that, and Paul said it as well, is, well, you know, it's our case. There's a crisis, periodic crisis of overproduction, in which too much stuff is made and people can't buy it, or the market's saturated and that sort of thing. that's what I considered was under consumption. But I think that the under consumptionist theory is a different argument, which is what Kleinman was talking about, which is that workers can't buy back the full amount of what they produce. But he's, as he points out, they can't do that at any time, because if they could, then they would be getting, there'd be no surplus value, there'd be no profit, and there'd be no capitalism. So I think I'm understanding the term under consumption in a different way from how Kleinman was using it.
Yeah, okay, so, Adam, okay, go ahead, please. Adam, you're muted.
Sorry, I was just going to say that theory that the workers can't buy back was quite widespread at one time. Even you can see in the columns of the Socialist Senate, it was used as an explanation as to why there was war. You know, if the workers can't buy back everything that's produced, the part that they can't buy back had to be exported, and this inevitably led to conflict between capitalists. Countries, and this led to war. As I say, you can find the examples of that in earlier numbers of the Socialist Senate. So it was quite a widespread argument at one time, and it's in what's his name, Jack London's the Iron Heel, and it's also in a more higher level in Rosa Luxemburg's The Accumulation of Capital. So it was an argument at one time needed refuting, and I thought Kleinman did it quite well.
Bon, Paddy.
Yeah, it occurred to me, some of you might know that yesterday in The Guardian, George Monbiot wrote a really good article sort of indicting capitalism. He seems to be getting closer and closer to our position. He's not quite there yet, but he was totally targeting the wealth class, in the article. if anybody hasn't seen it, I'll put up a link in a bit. But it occurred to me that one of the strongest arguments, I absolutely thought this was the strongest arguments against capitalism from the point of view of climate change is one which Monbiot has also put and other people are putting, which is the idea of infinite growth on a finite planet, which seems on the face of it unanswerable. But there are capitalist economists, correct me if I'm wrong, but who argue that periodic crises, economic crashes are actually good for the capitalist system. They call it creative destruction. And it further occurs to me that these same economists might use this concept of creative destruction to undermine the argument that Monbiot puts of infinite growth on a finite planet. What they'll basically be saying is, well, it's not infinite because you have periodic crashes that are built into the system. So they may co-opt the Marxist argument in order to undermine the case against capitalism in ecological terms. That's just off the top of my head now, but I thought I'd throw that in.
I'll just chuck me two pennies worth in. If you don't mind, Adam, if that's the case, it is quite obvious that every so often you've got capital that's been invested in things that are that capital's been overinvested in particular sections. So the crisis of capital is that it gets destroyed. Capital does get destroyed, does get cleaned out, and but I would say, well, so what? So what? Capital still is a precarious situation as far as the working class is. That's absolutely detrimental to our needs as just as human beings that need to consume in a consistent way and have a fantastic life, which is what capital can't offer to us. Hey, Adam.
I mean, so far we've only dealt with one aspect of the capitalist crisis cycle. That is, what causes a boom to go bust. But I'm sure next month, Mike Charity will deal with the other aspect of how capitalism recovers from a slump. And one of the things that happens is what you've just said, you know, that some means of production are physically destroyed, but also the value of other means of production, you know, falls a bit. It depreciates, and you know, when a firm goes bust, its assets are sold off to other firms at you know, a low price. So that, in that sense, I mean, capitalism does go forward in fits and jerks. But whether it would, you know, the people that talk about creative destruction, I mean, there's something in it. But whether that's going to be enough to, you know, to counter capitalism's growth, it isn't, because in the long run, production does go up under capitalism. It just doesn't go up in a straight line. It goes up in fits and troughs. What I'm saying, the continuation of this will I'm sure that Mike will deal with this aspect of how capitalism moves on the 28th of November, once again at 10 o'clock.
In a crisis, assets return to their rightful owner. Right, okay. Not sure I understand that particularly. Anybody? Well, yes, we've been going for over an hour and a half. Does anybody want to bring something to our attention that we haven't had before? If we could just give an advertisement for the Education Committee, of which I am the personification at the moment for the party. If there are members who would like to begin studying capital, if they've not done it before, then we have the possibility of running reading groups. At the moment, there's one running on volume 3, but we can run them on volumes 1 and 2 if there's any interest. Check Adam. And go ahead, Adam.
Sorry, this is not a continuation of the discussion. It's a continuation of you giving out publicity for something. And next week, there isn't any Discord meeting on the Friday night, but instead, there's going to be these meetings that I think you've organized on Jitsu. If you want to explain that to people who are here, what it is and what's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Tom. So next week we've got the we're hoping that we've got a lot of street activity in relation to the COP26 meeting, and as the backup to that activity, leafleting and at various events, we've got a series of meetings on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. Yet these will be on the Jitsi system. And I'm just getting the link for you. Excuse me one second. Yeah, so these meetings that will be on the Jitsi system, and that's the link to that meeting. What it's intended to do is, because all of our leaflets will be trying to encourage people to these meetings, it would be useful if some members would like to be around in those meetings just to take questions from visitors, right? So that is the starting on the Saturday, which is the 7th. So 7th of November to the 10th of November, every night 7:30 p.m. So So I'd be really, really grateful if members would like to attend those meetings to support the activity of the people out on leafleting out on the streets. All that you need to do is copy that address into a browser, and then you'll be asked. It's fairly straightforward to get into the meeting. I promise you, it's not as difficult as Discord. Go on, Paul.
Right. See, I was just going to ask, is it audio or video or mobile?
It can be either. Yeah, it's like Zoom. It's more or less exactly like Zoom. It's just that you don't need an invitation. You just need that address.
Superb. Cheers.
Okay. Cheers, Paul. Okay. Well,
can I just get that address? It's also in the calendar. It's also Discord calendar. It's on the website. It'll be on the homepage of the website from tomorrow. And
yeah,
the other thing is, you don't need to download anything for Jitsi. You don't have to install anything at all. You just follow the link as Steve says, and that's you should be in. So it's easy.
And just to make members aware, there is. There's been a special effort put into creating specific website pages for COP26, and they're actually available now. And if you go to the SPGB website under the heading, that I'm just putting in there under the heading climate change. Right. If I could just mention one more external resource that some people might find useful, it's that there is a series of lectures available on YouTube. They're called the Franke Lectures, which deal with some Marxist theory. We don't agree with everything that gets said on there, but it's quite an interesting series of lectures. So they're available on YouTube, and they deal with things like theory of value and alienation and so on and so forth. So I found some of them quite interesting. Thanks, Paddy. Paddy's put the full address up for the climate change pages. Okay, so if there's nothing else, I would thank you all for coming to the meeting and look forward to seeing you again soon, or speaking with you again soon. Thank you very much.